You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
Impeach him again. Impeach the motherfucker again for a third time. Because why not? If we can't get all 50 Dems in the Senate to agree to do the fuck away with the filibuster, nothing is going to get done in Congress anyway. If the 50 Dems in the Senate, who represent 42 million more Americans than the 50 Republicans in the Senate, if those 50 Dems don't all agree to end the anti-small-d Democratic filibuster, the Senate isn't going to have anything to do anyway. And since we don't want those motherfuckers to be idle, since we don't want to pay them just to sit there and do nothing, the Dem-controlled House should just keep impeaching the motherfucking former president, which they have the power to do, and sending new articles of impeachment to the Senate, forcing them to hold trial after trial after trial. Because why the fuck not? Backing up for a quick second, for those of you who don't know what the filibuster is, it is a rule that requires 60 senators to agree to end debate in order to vote on legislation. For 200 years, it was very rarely used, and when it was used, it was mostly used by racists to block civil rights legislation. But now, it has been fully weaponized by today's Republican Party to block any and all legislation. There's a great explainer on eliminating the filibuster at indivisible.org. Just look up the article, Eliminating the Filibuster. And yes, filibuster does sound like a euphemism for something filthy and fun, and if we eliminate the filibuster, we can redefine the word to mean something else. I mean, fill, getting filled, buster, busty, bust a nut. There's a lot to work with there. And we'll get to that work once the filibuster is eliminated. And we are so close to being able to do that work, because right now, 40 fucking 8 Democratic senators have come out in support of getting rid of the filibuster, which really has to happen if Dems are going to pass a public option for Obamacare or federal legislation blocking Republican efforts at the state level to make it harder to vote, including in critical swing states, or Dems are going to enact parts of the Green Deal, and on and on. And two Democratic senators have come out against eliminating the filibuster. So if you're a Democrat and you live in West Virginia and Joe Manchin represents you in the Senate, or you live in Arizona and Kristen Sinema represents you in the Senate, give your senator a call. Send your senator an email. Tell them to get rid of the fucking filibuster. This is dire, because voters are going to punish Dems in 2022 and 2024 if Dems don't get shit done. People know, people intuitively know that Dems have the power to deliver here. Not just for the majority of Americans that voted them into power, but also for Americans who didn't vote for Democrats, but might next time if Dems get some shit done that improves their lives. And voters aren't going to want to hear that respect for norms or process prevented Democrats from exercising their power and improving Americans' lives. Republicans wouldn't hesitate to end the filibuster if that's what they had to do to deliver for billionaires and bigots, and the Dems shouldn't hesitate to kill the fucking filibuster either. All right, back to the impeachment trial. I didn't watch. I couldn't watch. I baked a cake. I sucked a dick, which is ironic, because after baking a cake and sucking a dick, I got a message during the impeachment trial, a DM on Instagram, that had me thinking more deeply about both cakes and dicks for the rest of the day. Where are all the erotic cake stores, Cray Liotta asked me on Instagram. I haven't seen one in years, but they used to be everywhere. And you know, Cray's right. There used to be erotic bakeries in every major city. We used to have one here in Seattle, very creatively named The Erotic Bakery. They made dirty cakes, gag cakes. If you wanted a cake in the shape of a dick, you ordered from The Erotic Bakery. They made vulva cakes too, but the money was in dick cakes, mainly for bachelorette parties. These bakeries started popping up decades ago, which was before bachelorette parties made the transition to basically bachelor parties. It used to be the groom who went out on the town with his friends and got fucked up, and the bride stayed home with her friends and got fucked up. A bachelorette party was a baby shower with no baby, more alcohol, and a cake in the shape of a dick. Anyway, while everyone else was watching Donald Trump's second impeachment trial, I was engaged in an act of self-care. I was looking up old news stories about Seattle's erotic bakery and reading about why it went out of business, or why they shut it down. It didn't go out of business, they closed. Seemingly at the exact same time that other bakeries like it all over the country were closing too. So while you were reading hot takes about the trial on Twitter, I was reading 10-year-old hot takes about hotcakes. Turns out, Seattle's Erotic Bakery closed in 2014 due to a decline in demand. The owner, Kimmy Barnett, gave multiple interviews. She said people in 2014 just weren't ordering dick cakes the way they were back in 1984 when the shop opened. And I thought, 1984, 1994, 2004, the boom time for erotic bakeries, that was really an era when you didn't see dicks everywhere. You had to go out of your way to see a dick. I can see more dicks in 10 minutes on Twitter right now than I saw in the 10 years between ages 18 and 28. Remember how it used to be surprising to see a dick, sometimes even delightful? Now we're basically all dodging dicks all day long. There's porn all over the internet, dicks all over Twitter, unsolicited dick pics popping into our phones. Guys, according to studies, women do not enjoy receiving unsolicited dick pics, but gay men do. So guys, if you feel the urge to send an unsolicited dick pic, send it to a gay friend, not someone you hope to be your girlfriend. Anyway, my point is we can all see more dicks in 10 minutes on Twitter right now than you could see in any of those decades that the erotic bakeries were booming. So that's where the erotic bakeries went, Clay. The growing ubiquity of dicks, dicks everywhere over the decades, made their cakes less delightful, less surprising, less naughty. When actual dicks are coming at you constantly, there's going to be less demand for marzipan dicks on cakes. You could say, when it comes to dicks and cakes, we've all had our fill. A buster. All right, coming up on today's show, Dr. Sarah Hunter Murray is here to talk about her new book, Not Always in the Mood, The New Science of Men, Sex, and Relationships. That's on the Magnum Savage Lovecast that you can subscribe to at savagelovecast.com. On the Micro, free Savage Lovecast, tons of your Q's, lots of my A's, all that coming up on today's show. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by omgyes.com, a website devoted to women's pleasure. Check it out and get a discount when you go to omgyes.com/savage.
This episode of the Lovecast is brought to you by the good folks at Squarespace. They make it easy to build a beautiful website, blog, or online store. Head on over to squarespace.com/savage for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code SAVAGE to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Roman, a men's health company that offers remote online diagnosis for ED and convenient monthly delivery of medication. Go to GetRoman.com/savage today. If approved, you'll get $15 off your first order of ED treatment. That's GetRoman.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 30-year-old cis bi woman calling from a major East Coast city. I went through a breakup back in November, and it actually was very amicable. I'm still on great terms with my ex, and actually we're now kind of in a very healthy, you know, tied over the pandemic winter friends with benefits situation, which is a little bit of a quarantine success story embedded in this question. My question is actually, so my ex was also bi, and I met him on a dating app and just kind of stumbled upon him, and it wasn't in his profile. It wasn't until, you know, we had gone on a couple dates and it came up in conversation that I realized he was bi, and it ended up being really meaningful for me. It felt like something that we bonded over. It felt like something that shaped the way we both saw relationships and sex and all the ways you can do relationships that are perhaps, you know, different from the heteronormative standard or the default settings. And the relationship didn't work out, you know, for a number of reasons, but I came away with it feeling like I would really love to date a fellow queer person again. And like I said, I'm bi, but I definitely lean towards men. I'm pretty heteroromantic and kind of see myself, I think, ending up in a long-term relationship with a guy. So I guess my question is, I don't know how to seek out bi dudes who date women or primarily date women, because it just doesn't seem to be something that people are readily disclosing on dating apps in their profiles. I know in general, you know, there are lots of bi men who are not out. I think that, you know, based on what I know, the statistics, bi women outnumber bi men, but I just don't know how I go about finding another bi dude when I just kind of stumbled upon it organically. And of course, you know, I think the answer, like most things, is the internet, but I don't know. I already feel like I have decently high standards, and I'm pretty picky about who I date, and I feel like I'm taking my already kind of small pool of prospective partners and narrowing it further by saying, oh, it's really important to me to date a fellow queer person. So I don't know. I'm curious to hear your thoughts on all of this and how I approach this and maybe how I go about finding another fantastic bisexual dude to date.
So here's what you do. Your dating profile. Stop worrying about what the bi guys out there are not disclosing about themselves on their dating profiles. Your dating profile. Put on your dating profile that you are bisexual but heteroromantic, which is something I actually have come to think that most bisexuals are, and say, I am interested in dating bi guys, and I know there are a lot more guys on this site who are bi than guys who list themselves as bi. That won't stop straight guys who are interested in you from responding to your ad. It will attract the attention of guys who are bisexual whose ads don't say they're bi because they don't want to be discriminated against. They don't want to be rejected out of hand. They want to give a woman a chance to get to know them before they disclose it like your ex did, because there's a lot of people out there who just won't date bi guys. There are a lot of bi women out there who will say they won't date bi guys, which is crazy. You're not one of those bi women. You're someone that bisexuality in a male partner isn't something that you're willing to tolerate. It isn't a price of admission that you're willing to pay. It's something that you're psyched about and excited about. Doesn't sound like it's something you fetishized, but even if it were to some extent something that you fetishized, even if to some extent you really got off on watching your husband or boyfriend suck a dick, that wouldn't be so awful for a lot of bi guys out there who've had to endure and being in relationships with women who disapprove, or they assume disapprove, and then they can never tell. That correlates very highly, being in a relationship with someone who despises your bisexuality, with negative mental health outcomes for bi men. The biphobia, not of the broader culture, the biphobia, not of the gay and lesbian community, but the biphobia of their opposite sex partners. This is a marketable trait. Put it out there. Don't worry about what the bi guys are not putting on their ad. Don't worry about how hard it is for you to search whatever the dating apps you're on and find the bi guys. Just make it easier for the bi guys out there to find you.
Hi, Dan. I'm a Canadian calling you. I'm just trying to help my friend. She is engaged and was going to be married in September, and she recently found out that her fiance had cheated on her. And she really wants to work it out, and I do think they are going to work it out because they are a good couple. And I've been trying to tell her about positive stories, people staying together after cheating, because I think it's so taboo and people don't really talk about it, or people aren't open about it, that I just am wondering if some of your listeners can share stories of, you know, positive things that happened after cheating, so I can help give her some hope that, you know, eventually things will go back to normal one day.
First, a book recommendation. I would get your friend a copy of The State of Affairs, Rethinking Infidelity by Esther Perel. I recommend that book a lot. There are stories in that book of couples whose relationships were touched by infidelity, couples where one or the other, sometimes both, cheated. And there are some great case studies in the book. Clients, people that Esther Perel has worked with as a psychotherapist, who got through infidelity and came out stronger as a couple on the other side. Also tossing this out there to listeners of mine, if your relationship endured an infidelity, if you got through it, if you survived it, if you came out stronger on the other side of an affair and you want to call in and share your story, we will play a selection on an upcoming episode. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by OMGYes.com, a website devoted to women's sexual pleasure. In partnership with Indiana University and Kinsey Institute researchers, OMGYes has interviewed and surveyed thousands of women about what's made their pleasure better, physical techniques, the psychological techniques, and ways of guiding their partners so that they can experience pleasure or more pleasure during sex. The findings are peer-reviewed and published. This is science. They are doing data. They're not just winging it. And all of this research and data and science is brought to life in fun, honest videos featuring regular women sharing stories, from their own experiences about what works for them and what might work for you. I've watched a bunch of these videos. They're really great. I think they're really valuable. I think they're a tremendous resource, and I think you should check them out. One of the things their research has found is how easy it is for us to blunt or cut off our own explorations when we think things like, I've already got techniques that work for me, I'm good. But finding out what works for other people can help you find new things, bonus things, additional things that work for you. Indiana University School of Medicine researchers actually did a study giving OMG yes to 1,000 women and their partners. 96% realized there's actually more room in their lives for sexual pleasure, more room for growth. OMG yes is not a subscription. Each batch of content is a one-time payment, like buying a book, that you keep and own forever. And your contribution goes on to fund future pleasure research at IU and the Kinsey Institute. Learn more about the study at omgyes.com. And our listeners get a discount at omgyes.com/savage. Do yourself a favor. Do us a favor. Support the Lovecast by going to omgyes.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. I'm a married woman living in the South. I know you've often talked on the show about the price of admission when it comes to relationships. The price of admission to be with my husband was accepting that he had no interest in a few different things that I had always been interested in but never had a chance to try, namely a male-male-female threesome, or opening up the relationship in some form, or even just playing with others as a couple. We talked about these things openly when we very first started dating, so nothing was sprung on either of us after marriage. I dated a whole lot in my teens and 20s and tried a lot of different things and felt like I had a good grasp of who I was and what I wanted in a relationship. And my husband ticks a whole lot of those boxes, and overall, I think we are a very good match. But now that we've been married for a few years, reality is setting in a bit that we are in this thing for the rest of our lives. And I can't help but be a little bit disappointed in the fact that there are different sexual or relationship things I have always wanted to try, and now I'll never get a chance to. While the idea of my husband hooking up with someone else actually excites me and turns me on, I know that he never ever would and thinks it's kind of weird that that excites me, and is likewise obviously completely against the idea of me being with anyone else. He has also already experienced a threesome with another guy and a girl and said that he hated it and never wants to try it again. I've never been in an open relationship or had a threesome with two men, so I couldn't exactly say that it was a deal breaker for me in the beginning when we talked about all of this. When I was a teenager, I was a little bit obsessed with the idea of hooking up with a girl and thought that I was likely bisexual until I did hook up with a few different girls, one-on-one, a lesbian threesome, threesome with a guy and another girl, and realized after all of that it was fun, but it doesn't do enough for me to consider myself bisexual. So because of that, part of me thinks I'm fixated on these things because I know I'll never have them, and I wonder if whether I did experience them, maybe I would see that they're just not for me and it wouldn't be an issue at all that our marriage doesn't include them. I guess it's just the not knowing and the idea of never being able to explore it and find out that bothers me. I know that you've also talked about how in a lot of open relationships, the participants were not into the idea at first but gradually came around, but I don't want to hold out hope that that might eventually happen since it seems both unlikely and unfair to my husband, who was honest about all of this from the start. I guess I'm not really sure what my question even is. Maybe how do I stop wanting to try these things? How do I accept that there are just certain things in life I won't ever get to experience because it's the price of admission I agreed to pay?
Just because you paid the price of admission or decided that the price of admission was a price of admission you were willing to pay at the start of a relationship or a marriage doesn't mean you have to pay that price eternally. You can change your mind about whether you're going to continue to pay that price. If this is a price you are no longer willing to pay, if going without these experiences frustrates you, if it fills you with resentment, if it's going to curdle into something worse than resentment and destroy your marriage, well, then you go to your husband and you issue an ultimatum and you put him in the position of having to decide whether he's willing to allow you to do these things in order to keep you in the relationship, whether he's willing to open up the relationship on your side, perhaps exclusively, since he's not interested in sleeping with other people, and be a bit of a PUD, poly under duress, or not poly necessarily, because you're not looking to have relationships with other people, but open under duress and oud. Not quite as catchy as a pud, oud, but oud. It's going to be messy and it's going to be ugly, and it could end your marriage. He could decide to leave you, or you could wind up having one of those conversations where he angrily tells you to do whatever you need to do. He just doesn't want to know about it. And then you'll maybe, best case scenario, leave that conversation with a permission slip, a little don't ask, don't tell permission slip issued in anger and issued under duress. But then you can put it in your back pocket. You can live in hope. Sometimes to have your partner's permission, if the planets all align and you can do this thing that you want to do, maybe get it out of your system. And of course, getting it out of your system never quite works. Sexual fantasies, sexual experiences aren't things we get out of our system. You know, multi-partner sex, kinky sex, just like vanilla sex. You'll do it, and when you're done doing it, you're like, wow, I'm done doing that. And then you'll get horny again and want to do that thing again. But to have his permission slip in the back of your pocket, possibly, that if the planets align, one day you might be able to do this. It's paradoxical, I know, but sometimes having your partner's permission to do the thing takes the edge off your desire to do that thing immediately, because you know that eventually you might be able to do that thing. And it can make living without ever having done that thing and possibly never getting to do that thing a little bit easier, because you can live in hope that if the planets all align, again, you might be able to do this thing. So you might exit this conversation exiting your marriage, that's a risk. Or you might exit this conversation with this permission if an MMF circumstance ever presents itself and it's never going to get back to him, he's never going to know about it, you're not going to get pregnant, you're going to be extremely safe in that moment and minimize your risk for contracting a sexually transmitted infection. Okay, go ahead and do it. That's what you might leave that conversation with. But you might leave that conversation with your marriage in ruins and with him reaching out to a divorce attorney. That's the risk here. You have to decide whether getting that permission slip, getting that allowance to do these things that, oh my God, you should have done before you got married, fantasies, kinks, these things are important. And people at the beginning of a relationship will convince themselves that to prioritize sexual compatibility is to be a sex-deranged pervert. And if everything else is working but the sex isn't there, or you're not sexually compatible, that you shouldn't leave somebody about that or negotiate with somebody around that and extract an agreement from them before you make a commitment that allows for you to be who you are sexually, because that's just placing too much importance on sex. But as invariably happens, the longer you're with someone, the longer you go without whatever it is that you need to feel sexually fulfilled, the bigger a problem it becomes in the relationship. It just can't be wished away. Doesn't mean every sexual fantasy has to be acted on. It doesn't mean everybody who's ever paid the price of admission by entering into a relationship with somebody who isn't into anal and they are and they go without anal stews in anger and resentment, and eventually the marriage collapses. But if it's something really important to you, something you've always wanted to do, if it really speaks to who you are, not fighting for it, for a space for it at the beginning of the relationship, before you make a commitment, before you scramble your DNA together, is a huge mistake. You, caller, you made that mistake. Now you're faced with the daunting prospect of re-engineering your relationship, renegotiating your commitment to allow for these things, to get permission from a guy who isn't into these things at all to go do these things with, most likely not with, or without him. Or you could cheat if you're with somebody 50 years and they only cheat on you once or twice. They were good at being monogamous, not bad at being monogamous. The inverse of that, of course, is if you're with somebody 50 years and you only cheat on them once or twice, then you were pretty good at being monogamous. Still a shitty thing to do. Still something that might blow up your marriage. A lot of people can't look at even one infidelity and weigh it against 49 years, one infidelity in 1 year or one day or one night, and weigh it against 49 years and 365 days of perfectly executed exclusivity and commitment and monogamy. So it is a risk, and I'm not advising you to cheat. I think you should have this difficult conversation, and I think other people listening should be inspired by your predicament to have this difficult conversation, to prioritize what they need out of life, not just the relationship sexually, at the start of a relationship before a commitment is made. Because to renegotiate those terms after a long-term commitment is made, after a marriage, is really hard and really dangerous, and a lot of marriages collapse during those negotiations. Good luck.
This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Squarespace. Whether you need a landing page, a beautiful gallery, a professional blog, or an online store, it's all there for you at Squarespace. Creating your site with Squarespace is a simple, intuitive process. Do you run your own business? You can design a great-looking online store with Squarespace's award-winning templates, customizable settings, and more, all without a single plugin. From nationally recognized brands to your favorite local shops, Squarespace is trusted by hundreds of thousands of savvy shop owners around the world, including all the tools you need to track inventory, process orders, and send custom emails in one intuitive interface. Squarespace's e-commerce allows you to understand every aspect of your business. If you need a website for more artistic pursuits, Squarespace has beautiful, easy-to-use templates that you can drag and drop with the greatest of ease. And if you need help, they have 24/7 customer support. So chill. Head on over to squarespace.com/savage for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code SAVAGE to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/savage and use the offer code SAVAGE.
Hey, Dan. I'm a 36-year-old in the Bay Area. I recently, a week ago, ended a 5-year relationship, a polyfidelitous triad. I was a single female dating a couple who had been dating for about 12 years. And then the three of us had been dating for about 4 years, and I'd been dating the man for 5 total. It was a great arrangement. It wasn't perfect. And then when the pandemic happened, he became increasingly disconnected from me and more connected to his other longtime partner. None of us lived together, and we just grew apart during this time, unfortunately. I don't know, it just sort of like fell apart, and anger happened and resentment happened, and days of visitation happened and didn't happen, and sharing happened and didn't happen, and there were lots of fights, and it just got to a point where I needed to break it off. So I called him up on a Saturday morning, and I left him a voicemail, and that's it. That's how the relationship ended. I'm calling because he texted me a week ago and said that, you know, after we had taken some time and the anger had kind of settled down, he texted and said that we would talk on the phone in a few days. And now it's been about a week, and I just am a little bit in disbelief that a 5-year relationship comes down to a voicemail and then nothing. I haven't heard from him. It's just a little bit unbelievable to me that like this is how a 5-year intimate relationship with two other people comes to a close, just to never hear from them again. He texted me, told me we would talk on the phone in a few days. It's been more than a few days. He hasn't reached out. Is the ball in my court? Even though I fought really hard to keep the relationship going, and then I was eventually the one who ended it. Do I need to put forth any more effort and work into this relationship? Or should I just accept it and move on with my life? It's just like 5 years is not an insignificant time, and I'm having trouble getting over the fact that we just like never speak again, seriously. So I'm not sure what to do, if I should be the one to follow up and give him a call and talk it out and close it out, or if that's just it, if I just like need to fade into the darkness and move on with my life and start dating some other people. What do you think?
I have this t-shirt that I love. Bear with me. This will make sense in a second. From this really great company called Hinterland Empire in California, woman-owned, woman-run, woman designs. It's really awesome. And I want to preface what's on the t-shirt with designed by a woman, marketed by a woman, sold by a woman's company. And the t-shirt says over an image of a frog holding an umbrella, and it's raining inside the umbrella. It says everyone is fighting their own battle. Try not to be a cunt. I don't think you're being a cunt. That's not what I mean to imply. What I'm saying here is that you don't know quite what's going on with them. And of course, you don't know what's going on with them because they haven't been communicating with you. But this is a difficult time. The last year has been incredibly hard on so many people. And it may feel like the two of them prioritized each other over you, but you don't know what's going on in their relationship. You don't know what's going on in each of their lives because, again, they haven't shared that information with you. It might be helpful if they had shared that information with you. It still might not be satisfying. You still might be angry about the effort you put into trying to sustain this relationship and how that effort wasn't met with effort on their sides after all these years together to sustain a relationship with you. There's probably not a lot they could say that's going to take the edge off your hurt. Only time will take the edge off your hurt. But if and when you speak to them again, considering what the last year has been like for so many people, you're likely to find out things that, while not excusing their neglect of you, might put it into a context where you can wrap your head around it. But you're not going to get that information. You're not going to get that download until you hear from them. And they told you a week ago, or he told you a week ago, he would call you in a few days. Few is a bit elastic. Some people say, I'll call you in a few days, and they mean exactly three. Some people say, I'll call you in a few days, and they mean something under double-digit days. And he is still under double-digit days here. So you may hear from him. But again, what you hear from him, well, you might find out some things that have been going on for them that makes their neglect of you not forgivable necessarily, but perhaps a little bit more understandable. You're unlikely to get closure, though. What you're angry about, this is how it ends after 5 years. After 5 years in this poly triad, you just choose each other and run off with each other together and leave me. And that's not going to change. They left you in the dust. They left you behind. They chose each other. That is always going to hurt. I do think that closure is something we do for ourselves. It's not a gift other people give us. I also think that after several years, 5 years with someone or a couple, that they should demonstrate a little bit more consideration and a little bit more compassion when ending the relationship. You've also been going through this pandemic, and you've managed to get through this pandemic with a lot less emotional, social, sexual support than they've had going through this pandemic, because they had each other and chose each other. And they've demonstrated a lack of consideration and a lack of compassion for you at a time where you could really be going through it too. And you have been going through it just as they've been going through it. So my advice for you is, yeah, the ball is in their court. You reached out and you say there's been some exchange of messages after this phone call. So you're still in his mind. You're still in their minds. They still need, and they've demonstrated that they know they need to circle back to you, to get in touch with you, not to end it, because you already ended it. You broke up with him with a voicemail. For all you know, he was upset and hurt to get a voicemail. For you to end it after 5 years with a voicemail, he may have his own beefs and complaints when you get him on the phone. They should have reached out to you after they said they would. They shouldn't have let you die on the vine there throughout the pandemic. But it's just going to take time. It's going to take time to get over it. You'll hear from them. When you hear from them, you will still be angry when you hear from them about how long it took for them to get back to you. And maybe with an explanation, with some context, after he gets to tell you that he was hurt that you ended it with a voicemail, and you get to tell him that you were hurt that they withdrew from you and so clearly chose each other and didn't prioritize you at all as an equal partner, after you both aired your grievances, maybe that'll help. Maybe you can move on. And even if you don't hear from them in under double-digit days, within the next few days, you live in the same city, you probably move in some of the same circles, you are likely to run into them again. Maybe at some point in the future, after you've given yourself a little bit of closure about this relationship, after you've given that gift to yourself, when you do run into them or they reach out to you, the anger will be a little less white hot than it is right now. And maybe then will be a better time to talk about it. But now is the perfect time for you to move on, for you to make the decision to move on, for you to close that door, for you to give yourself the gift of closure and not sit around getting angrier and angrier as you wait for that phone to ring. This episode of the Savage Love Cast is brought to you by Roman. On my show, we talk a lot about erectile dysfunction, and I take it seriously, but I know it's hard to talk about it in your daily life, with your doctors, with your partners. Usually guys will just brush it off, saying things like, I lost my mojo, or avoid it altogether with excuses like, I had a long day at work, or sorry, honey, I'm just not feeling it, because they're afraid. They're afraid they're not going to be able to do it. But with Roman, it is easy to talk about with a real healthcare professional who can prescribe real medication that really works. Roman is simple, safe, and totally discreet. With Roman, you get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. A healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, Roman will ship it to you with free two-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward, simple, and discreet, and it can help you get your mojo back. Getting started is simple. Just go to GetRoman.com/savage and complete an online visit. Erectile dysfunction used to be tough to tackle, but now there's Roman. Complete an online visit today to connect with a healthcare professional and get it taken care of. Go to GetRoman.com/savage today. If approved, you'll get $15 off your first order of ED treatment. That's GetRoman.com/savage. Let them know the Lovecast sent you. GetRoman.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 34-year-old male. I'm gay. So I have a friend who called me to tell me that another mutual friend, that he had found out that our mutual friend was potentially sleeping with a guy periodically. He would get drunk and fuck some guy. This is only a thing because this mutual friend is straight. The mutual friend and I are very close, and I think it is dangerous for him to hang out with the guy who called to tell me about this. And I want to warn him without telling him that I know that potentially there's something. Like, I don't want him to, I'm not trying to out anyone or bring any shame. I just think that he should know to stay away from the friend who called to tell me about this, because that friend is planning to try and, get him somehow. It's all very predatory. How do I do that?
So just so I'm clear, there's this guy who either identifies as straight or allows people to assume he's straight, who's fucking a dude, and some other friend of yours knows about the fact that this ostensibly straight dude is fucking a dude and he wants to fuck him, and you're worried about what happening exactly?
So the guy who identifies as straight is, I know him because he's a trainer of mine. And my other friend who found out about him wants to start coaching with him again and wants to, it feels really predatory. It feels like he's trying to lure him in. He's talked about like having him over, maybe having him have a couple of drinks and seeing what will happen. And so I've tried to warn my trainer friend, like, hey, be careful around this guy because he could be, but I don't want to be too explicit because I don't want to inadvertently out someone. I feel like if he wanted to tell me, he would. It's none of my business.
Well, you could. You can say to a straight trainer at a gym, particularly a straight trainer who works a lot of gay men, my friend Mark sure has the hots for you. That doesn't obligate him to come out to you. That doesn't mean he's gay necessarily.
True.
But then you sent up a flare in case Mark's attention, not that the guy's name is Mark, but in case, quote unquote, Mark's attentions are unwelcome, then he won't want to get alone with Mark and have a couple of drinks. But if Mark's attentions are welcome, if this guy is heteroflexible, if this guy is bisexual but heteroromantic or whatever is going on for this guy,
sure.
Once he knows that, you may have been the matchmaker that got
sure.
Mark into his pants. Mark's desire to get into his pants isn't necessarily predatory, so long as he's not pouring an entire bottle of Maker's Mark down his throat in an effort to get into his pants.
Yeah, that's true. I think I am kind of like making an insinuation about our mutual friend. I mean, he is like, I find him to be a little skeezy, but that doesn't necessarily mean that he actually is or is behaving that way. That is very true.
Is there any jealousy at play here? Do you want to get in this trainer's pants?
No, not at all. The reason I think I feel a little weird about it is because I do find the mutual friend to be a little
skeezy,
just like past behavior. Uh-huh. No, I think of the trainer more like a brother figure, and it's mostly that like I feel like, yeah, I think so of him more like a brother figure.
The person you're actually contemplating outing is this friend of yours who's skeezy and you feel predatory, so why is he your friend? But we'll set that aside. You know, he's got kind of a skeezy past that you would, if you were going to sleep with him, maybe want to know about. If you were going to date him, you would want to know about that because it would make you not want to date him or fuck him. And so you kind of want to share that info with this trainer in case he's thinking about fucking him, but you can't because then that means you're going to have to tell the trainer that you know he fucks dudes and you're telling him not to fuck this particular dude.
Exactly. And it's also that, like, the way that he talks about wanting to have him over for cocktails, wanting to have him over to, like, see if he can get him drunk, see if he can get him to fuck him with the little alcohol.
Okay, you can definitely share all that information with your trainer without telling the trainer that you know that he sometimes fucks dudes. You can say to him,
yeah,
Mark has the hots for you. So, you know, if he takes you out for drinks, probably going to make a move. And then he'll be on his guard. He'll also then know if, you know, Mark is somebody he wants to fuck, have a couple of drinks and fuck, he totally could. And, you know, somebody who's a personal trainer is a service professional, works with a lot of people. And if this guy gives off a bad vibe, I think you can trust that someone who is in a service industry could pick up on that. And you don't necessarily have to say, here's all the shitty things Mark's ever done that I know about. Yeah. And yet we are still friends somehow.
Yeah. I mean, we're not like that close of friends. It's just like he was my neighbor. So like I know him pretty well. Mm-hmm. But he did a couple of skeezy things that we're not that close.
Okay. So if he's somebody you would warn a gay friend off of.
Yes, he is.
You can warn your personal trainer about him with the premise of the warning being, of course, he wouldn't be interested. The assumption being, you know, a respect for his public sexual orientation, his public sexual identity being, you know, of course, he wouldn't be interested. You don't even have to say that. You can just so you know, like Mark totally has the hots for you. I'm sure if he's a personal trainer at a gym where a lot of gay men go, that's not going to be a new experience for him. Maybe that's indeed why he's a personal trainer.
Yeah. That's very true. I didn't think of it that way. I thought of it in terms of just trying to protect, and maybe that's the wrong way to think about it. Like I should treat him just like I would treat any other of my gay friends, which would be like, hey sis, watch out for him. He's a little creepy.
Yeah. And the thing about, you know, that kind of those whisper networks are important. You know, we don't want abusers or people who use people to move through communities, picking people off and everybody keeping their mouths shut and not giving friends the heads up. On the other hand, you know, when somebody gives us that kind of heads up, like maybe they had a bad experience with that person. Maybe they were the shitty person in that interaction and they're, you know, trying to shift the blame onto that other person or retaliate against that other person for rejecting them. You have to still use your bullshit detectors. Even if you hear something about someone, you're going to want to weigh what you've heard against your own interactions with that person and hope your judgment isn't clouded by dickful thinking. So just a caveat there, like when someone tells you something about somebody else that, you know, maybe you should be on your guard, that can't always be taken at face value. You have to weigh what that person's saying against the person in front of you. But yeah, give him a heads up. Totally give him a heads up. Like you would to
Okay, great.
Any
great. I just wanted to make sure
buddy.
I wasn't being a dick. So thank you.
No, I don't think you're being a dick. I think the standard is if he's somebody you would warn a gay friend about, you can warn a straight friend about. Particularly if he's told you, I'm going to try to get that straight identified guy drunk and get into his pants. But then if he does, obviously those are pants that the straight guy wanted him in.
Yeah, absolutely. And then go with God.
Good luck.
Cool. Thank you.
Hi, Dan. I'm a bi woman from the Pacific Northwest. I was previously in a long-term relationship that was emotionally abusive and took a long while to break off from, and I've been single for 2 years. I recently am on a temporary contract traveling for work, and got into a little fling with a coworker, and we both were like, hey, we're just going to do this with coworkers, but, you know, it's a temp contract. I'm only going to be here for so long. Like, let's see where this goes. Pretty quickly, within a few weeks of kind of talking and the relationship starting to build, I started to recognize some behaviors in her that felt like my abusive ex. She would frequently ask me to sacrifice sleep and cancel my plans so I could hang out with her, but then she would cancel on me because she would rather go hang out with her friends, and lots of asking me to sacrifice my life, but I was never a priority to her, and she could never sacrifice anything for me. And I would see her at work, and she would ask me to come over, and I said no, I wanted to sleep. We worked night shift, and I would tell her no, and then she would spend the whole night asking me many times to come over and wouldn't take my no as an answer. And that's really when I realized that, you know, this is me being attracted to the same personality type, and I need to cut it off. Before I got a chance to, she told me she was going to be busy, so I made other plans, and then she asked me to hang out, and I told her I was busy, and then she's like, I get it if you're not into me, and it really upset me because a little bit of taste for own medicine, and she freaked out on me. So I told her I wasn't interested anymore, and I already decided that, and I didn't want to go any further before we got any more complicated, and I pretty much left it at that. She pushed for more explanation, but I just said I already made the decision and left it at that. But I feel very guilty because I feel like, you know, as an adult, I should give a proper explanation for why I'm choosing to cut something off. But at the same time, she's proven already she doesn't respect my no, and that, and it feels like, just like my ex, an explanation isn't going to matter, that she's going to try to convince me out of it and try to convince me why she's right anyway. So that's at least the feeling I get and the signs that I've interpreted so far. But I'm really stuck because I feel like an asshole for kind of ghosting her and telling her, no, I don't want to do this anymore, and leaving it at that. But am I just doing what's proper for myself, or am I being unhealthy and a jerk by just dropping her?
I don't understand what you have to feel guilty about here. You didn't ghost her. She was jerking you around, and you told her you didn't want to do this anymore, and you ended it. You ended it without the explanation that you were ending it because she reminds you of your abusive ex, and you thought she was a jerk and inconsiderate and rude and presumptuous. You don't have to rattle off that list of sins and shortcomings and character flaws to exit this relationship. And you did exit it. You said, I don't want to do this anymore. You texted her. Ghosting is, we've been fucking for a little bit or dating for a little bit, and we have plans for Tuesday, and then you don't respond to my texts about our plans for Tuesday, and then I never hear from you again. That's ghosting. She was jerking you around and getting mad at you, and you said, you know what? I'm not enjoying this anymore, and I don't want to do this anymore. And that's all the explanation you owe her. So when you say you feel guilty, I'm wondering who you think you wronged here. You didn't wrong her by not telling her. She reminds you of your abusive ex, or that she's a rude and inconsiderate person. You don't owe her that necessarily. It might benefit her to hear that. Maybe it would be the wake-up call she needs to stop treating people this way. Maybe you would be the third or fourth girlfriend who exited her life in the exact same way, and she would finally see the pattern and maybe get her ass into therapy. Maybe, maybe, maybe those things would happen. But you don't owe her any of that. I suspect that what you feel guilty about is that you didn't get to have the last word, that she exited the relationship thinking that you were in the wrong, but you exited the relationship knowing in your bones that she was the one who was in the wrong. So it's not really an altruistic impulse that's motivating you to give her a call and let her know every last thing she did to drive you out of her life and her bed. Maybe it comes from a meaner place, not mean and malicious. You want to like wound her, but like a smaller and pettier place. It can be unsatisfying to end a relationship with someone that you feel has treated you badly, and to know that they walked away feeling like you were the jerk, when in reality, they were the jerk, which is why you ended the relationship. If you want the last word, you can definitely attempt to have it. You can't stop her from arguing with you or replying or sending you a text back or an email back or leaving you a voicemail back, making the opposite case. But you can reach out to her and say, look, these are the things that you did. you know, these expectations that you had that, you know, your plans were sacred and my plans were always malleable and you could ask me to change plans, drop plans, and I would, and then you would blow me off. That was hurtful. And goodbye. And you probably shouldn't treat people like that in the future. Can't just snap your fingers and have a girlfriend show up in your bed between your legs whenever you want. You have to be giving as well. And then block her, I guess, lest she responds, lest she gets the last word, which is what I suspect you want. So if you want the last word, you can give it to her. Say your piece. And then either block her so you don't get a response, or have the self-discipline not to read her response and feel tempted to get dragged in to a back and forth. And here's hoping that that temporary contract is already up. All right, before we get to your response calls, let's read your tweets. Lil Gossip XO tweets, mismatched COVID risk assessment is the new mismatched libido. Thoughts, Dan? Well, I see what you mean, Lil Gossip. I see what you're going for. But after the pandemic ends, people aren't going to sit around sharing or really even thinking about their COVID risk assessments when choosing partners. Maybe they should. We all want to be with people who have good judgment. And someone who took unreasonable risks during the pandemic obviously has terrible judgment. But mismatched libidos, those are a problem right now. They'll be a problem after the pandemic, absent some reasonable accommodation. So mismatched libidos, potentially a bigger problem going forward. Laura Baranek tweets, basking in the high EQ glow of my two favorite radical empaths of the male persuasion on this week's Savage Lovecast. Can we have more like at fake Dan Savage and more like at John Ronson, please? I don't know if there are more like John Ronson out there. Maybe they're more like me. I don't think I'm that special, but John Ronson is one of a kind and he is welcome to come back on our show anytime. And finally, Cheyenne Summer tweets, I know I've listened to too much Savage Lovecast when a coworker tells me his wife thinks I'm awesome. And my first thought is, wait, am I about to be asked to swing? So Cheyenne, were you asked to swing? You don't say. Inquiring minds, we want to know. And hey, there is no such thing as too much Savage Lovecast. Thank you to everyone who posted about the show to your social media last week. And if you want me to read your tweet on next week's show, be sure to use the hashtag SavageLovecast. And now your response calls.
Hi, Dan. Physician here calling from the East Coast in response to the caller from episode 746 who asked about transmittable infections that can arise when eating out unwashed buttholes. Your advice isn't quite right, so I wanted to make a few clarifications. Hepatitis A isn't a thing that people are regularly tested for unless they're symptomatic, so you wouldn't necessarily know if your partner had it. Also, all sorts of bacteria live in our guts that aren't supposed to be translocated to the upper gastrointestinal tract. So you could easily transmit E. coli or Giardia or any other number of bacteria from your lower GI tract to someone else's upper GI tract if the butthole isn't freshly washed. Of course, this risk is always there despite washing, but it's much lower risk if the washing happened right before the eating. Happy eating.
Hey, Dan, I'm calling about the woman in the Bay Area who had called in about her situation with her boyfriend and their very different finances and her needing to move back with her parents and so on. And I think that you missed a big red flag in her call. At the very end of her call, she mentioned that he wants to buy a house together and he doesn't want his name on it. I think that's a red flag anyway, but especially given their financial situations, I think it's an even bigger red flag, and she should DTMFA.
Hi, I have an ultimatum suggestion for the woman whose husband will not go down on her when they have sex, which is just to tell him playfully, if you will, that he doesn't get to get off or he doesn't get to put his dick in you until he's eaten you out. And you just make that a rule that applies 100% of the time you have sex. And if you want to release him from that occasionally and say, you know, tonight's just about you. You don't have to worry about me. You can do that. So it doesn't have to be 100% of the time you have sex, but it's just sort of a foundational place to work from.
And we're going to leave it there. Got a question for me or a comment about this week's show? There are two ways to get them to us. You can call us at 206-302-2064, or you can use the voice memo app on your phone to record your question or comment and email it to us at voicemail@savagelovecast.com. Grab your tickets for an all-new Savage Lovecast live stream with me, Nancy, and our very special guest, the profane dominatrix and writer, Mistress Matisse. Send your questions ahead of time, especially if they're SM-related, for Matisse, to livestream@savagelovecast.com, or just come to the show and ask your questions live. Go to savagelovecast.com/events to get tickets. And the Hump 2021 Film Festival is going strong with two shows this weekend, including a viewing party with Hump filmmakers and performers this Friday and a European screening on Saturday, February 20th. Head over to humpfilmfest.com to choose a showtime that works for you. Follow me on Twitter @FakeDanSavage. Follow Dr. Murray on Twitter @SexDrSarah. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech savvy at Riskute and Nancy. We'll all be back at you next week with an installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thank you for downloading.